The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu. Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
Sunny skies. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up in just a moment, following public backlash, Gwinnett County School District employees will no longer have to report to their work sites next week. So now there's a new plan.
Well, we did get some good feedback from teachers and support staff. What we're doing is really having a rotating plan. Our teachers and many of the support staff are going to be continuing to work from home, but they will have available times this week and next week to come in and close out their classrooms.
That conversation coming up in just a moment. But first, the latest information as it relates to the coronavirus here in Georgia. As of today, there are 35,245 confirmed cases. The number of deaths statewide is reported to be 1,493. And there are 6,228 hospitalized. That's all according to the Georgia Department of Public Health as of 10 a.m. today. Meanwhile, bars, nightclubs, and performance venues in Georgia must remain closed through May 31st. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp made the announcement last night.
I know this extension is difficult for many Georgia business owners in communities that have music venues. However, we believe that waiting a little bit longer will enhance health outcomes and give folks the opportunity to prepare for safe reopening in the near future.
Kemp signed an executive order permitting summer day camps to open if specific regulations are followed. And also, Governor Kemp gave comment regarding the shooting death of Ahmaud Arbery.
Attorney General Chris Carr announced yesterday that Cobb District Attorney Joyette Holmes will lead the prosecution. He also urged the Department of Justice and GBI to conduct an investigation into the process that delayed justice. I hold great confidence in Joyette Holmes, state law enforcement, and the Department of Justice. It is my belief that truth and justice will prevail in Georgia.
Now the men facing indictment for Arbery's death, Gregory and Travis McMichael, are still jailed in Glynn County. In related news, the Atlanta City Council formally proclaimed May 8th as Ahmaud Arbery Day. May 8th was Arbery's birthday. Councilmember Antonio Brown presented the resolution to Arbery's family in person yesterday while in Brunswick.
And whereas in honoring his life, we preserve his legacy and keep his memory alive, his ability to encourage and enrich the lives of others, and his strong sense of humanity and compassion will never be forgotten.
And some Georgia state representatives say they plan to introduce a similar resolution for the entire state once the General Assembly resumes. This is Closer Look. This is Closer Look, and I'm Rose Scott, and we're in our spring member drive, but please stay right here because we'll keep this break very short. But first, I gotta let you know that we need your help to keep WABE going. That's because 84% of our funding comes from the Atlanta community. So please, give right now at wabe.org/donate. Joining me is WABE's Alita McCalman, our education specialist.
That's right, Rose. That is wabe.org/donate or call 678-553-9090. We need your financial support right now because it helps pay for shows that you love like Closer Look. But today we are partnering with the Piedmont Healthcare Foundation to provide a frontline worker with a kit of personal protective equipment, which is so necessary. Those are items like masks, gloves, gowns, shoe covers. And the Piedmont Healthcare Foundation is an organization that specifically raises resources for Piedmont Healthcare's system. So please help by making a donation now at WABE.org cpe.org/donate or by calling 678-553-9090.
Yes, that's wabe.org/donate. And thanks to all the listeners who've already made a financial gift to WABE. Folks like Ann Roschel of Douglasville. And Ann says, WABE is my exclusive radio station for excellent, accurate reporting, great entertainment, and moving human interest stories. Thanks for being there for Atlanta. Well, thank you, Ann, for your message and your support. Her donation makes this all possible. But we still need to hear from you. Please give right now at wabe.org/donate. And thank you.
Or call 678-553-9090. And every day on Closer Look, Rose gives you the essential news and important interviews about the pandemic. And we can only do this with your support. It's why we need your donation. Many of our listeners donate about $15 a month, but please give what you feel you can afford. At wabe.org/donate. Or with a call to 678-553-9090. And thank you.
Thanks to everyone who's helped us this afternoon. I really appreciate it. But we need you too. Please give at 678-553-9090. And thanks.
Or at wabe.org/donate. It only takes a couple of minutes to give. And if you're already a sustaining member of WABE, please consider giving an additional gift if you can. It'll really help us out during these challenging times. Make your donation by calling 678-553-9090 or go to wabe.org/donate. And thank you.
Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE. This is Atlanta's Choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. On May 1st, the Gwinnett County School System released a new plan to bring employees, including teachers and support staff, back into the buildings in late May. Now, under this original plan, teachers would have been expected to return to their classrooms next Monday and work for about a week. Now, that idea drew quite a bit of backlash from teachers and parents, all expressing concerns, obviously, about health and safety. So the school system has made some revisions. And joining me now to talk more about the new plan and how the district plans to prepare for the fall school year is Dr. Steve Flint, Gwinnett Associate Superintendent for School Improvement and Operations. Dr. Flint, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Well, thanks for giving me a little bit of time. And with your questions, I think it is important to continue to talk about our plans, although we know there's a lot of uncertainty out there. There's a lot of work going on in Gwinnett County Public Schools, and I know a lot of our neighboring school districts are doing the same thing. But in the effort to really get our students what they need, close out the school year well, and hopefully provide some good encouragement to start the next school year.
This is uncharted waters, so a lot of this is learning what can happen, what cannot happen, the good, the bad, and the challenges.
Yeah, that's right. We've had a pandemic plan in place for the last 10 or 11 years. Actually, it was developed in an effort with H1N1, and as we've really worked with that over the last couple of years and now actually putting it into place, you know, there's a lot of things that don't work. There's a lot of things that do work. And so we're continually looking at that and trying to make adjustments that's best for everybody involved.
Dr. Flint, to your knowledge, in terms of what you can provide, do you know if the district has any educators or support staff that tested positive for the coronavirus?
We do. We have a plan in place that we actually put in place from the start when we knew this was going to be a challenge for us. And we do have our Office of Health and Social Services. We have a group of nurses and a lead nurse that work directly with our health partners. So our closest health partner is Department of Public Health, which is Gwinnett, Newton, Rockdale. Mm-hmm. They've been extremely helpful with this, contact tracing and working with our employees, and so we've been able to follow their guidance on this, and really as soon as somebody's either identified as having COVID-19 or having a contact that fits any part of that profile, we have a process that keeps them away from work for the specified period of time until they're released to come back.
Have you had that occur just in numbers, one, two, five?
You know, our numbers of people that we've been working with has been a good number, because you can have, as soon as you have one person that's identified as having COVID-19 in a building, all of the contacts for that person, and in our cases that could be 10 or 12 at a time, would be asked to self-quarantine for up to 14 days, depending mm-hmm. on the situation. So right now, the last numbers that I saw were in the 30s mm-hmm. That we've been either self-quarantining or keeping out of the building, and those are just the ones that are our requirements and that we know about. Of course, people, those are the people who've been reporting to work. Mm-hmm. Many other people are just now starting to report back to work, and so they're having to give us that information, you know, as they come back in.
Are you all requiring those workers who are, whether support staff or those who work in the facilities and all the different buildings, are you all requiring that they have some sort of clearance? How are you all, to the district's best ability, being able to monitor folks? Or are you leaving it up to the individual employee?
Yeah, the individual employee has some responsibilities on that. We follow everything with the CDC guidance and our Department of Health partners. So we feel really good, not only about that, but about the precautions that we already have in place. You know, I think it's important to say anytime the employees are coming back into a building to do their work, and we know they've been doing a lot of this work from home and doing an excellent job with that. So when we have a time when they either need to come back in or coming back in more numbers, we need to make sure that we're taking the safety precautions and providing mm-hmm. all the protections that are required and that are recommended. And, of course, we're following the CDC guidelines and continue to work with public health to find out what those best practices might be in addition to the requirements and guidance from the CDC.
Dr. Flint, at the time of this conversation, Gwinnett County is third in the state with the number of confirmed cases, and I believe fourth statewide in deaths, and this without any certainty as to when the state could or will experience a decline. Why the initial plan to bring some educators and some staff into the schools, where some might say so early here in May?
Well, we're looking forward to closing out the school year. One, we've continued to be able to provide education for our students, and that's been happening mostly with teachers and support staff working from home. It's coming this week. We're actually in exams. We're going to close out the school year next week. And so there is a need to close out the building, provide a good bit of help in either closing down the school or providing feeding for our students or planning for next year. And we can maybe talk about some of those specifics.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a need for actually people to be in the building, especially if we're feeding students. We have bus drivers. We have school food nutrition people. We've now fed over 2 million meals to the Gwinnett community and the students that are in Gwinnett.
Some of your buildings have been open throughout this time, and you've had folks in and out, just for clarity here.
Sure. Yeah, we have had individuals working in our district office. We have remained working in the district office, and all of our schools, individuals have been working in each of the schools, and our school buildings are very large. We've put in a number of precautions. We're following all the CDC guidance on social distancing and PPE to make sure that the individuals that are working have access to that. But the principals have been working in the schools, some of the support staff, to help continue what we've been able to provide, and probably most important is the education to students throughout the rest of this school year. I think second to that, and really very important, is that we have been able to provide at 67 of our schools a feeding program mm-hmm. that not only has happened at the school where we've been able to pass out meals at the local school, but we've had bus drivers take all of those meals out into the community for those clusters that are identified and that fit with what we The program that we use is Seamless Summer to help provide that feeding with federal funding. And so it does take people to do that work and to prepare the meals and to drive the buses and to set the routes and to do that. I would also maybe mention the last couple of weeks we've been working on our high schools providing graduation virtually to our students.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a good bit of information that we needed to pass out and give to students. They were able to come and to receive their caps and gowns and send us back information with pictures. And so we're currently working on finalizing our virtual graduations that will happen over Memorial Day weekend. And so, you know, that does take filming. We have individuals that came into the schools, salutatorian, valedictorians, the principals to do their speeches.
The voice you hear is Dr. Steve Flint. He's the Gwinnett Associate Superintendent for School Improvement and Operations. And we're talking about the school's current plan for closing out the school year and also preparing for the next school year. So, Dr. Flint, let's talk about the new plan. So, teachers will not be returning to school as scheduled on May 18th, and what revisions have you all made now?
Right. Well, we did get some good feedback from teachers and support staff. What we're doing is really having a rotating plan. Our teachers and many of the support staff are going to be continuing to work from home, but they will have available times this week and next week to come in and close out their classrooms. We're providing opportunities for students to pick up needed materials. At the end of next week, we're going to be providing information on grades and on a student's ability to continue working over the summer, whether it's a required or optional summer school program. And then the schedules for starting back the school year. And I thought you said that very well, in that at this time things do keep changing pretty frequently as far as the guidance that we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a clear plan for opening back up. Even though we have a plan, you know, that is going to probably be adjusted based on information that we continue to get from public health, from CDC, as well as the numbers of, you know, the COVID-19 across the county and state.
And Dr. Flint, for those educators or support staff, employees who make the decision that they do want to come back to close out their classrooms or pick up materials, are you all requiring everyone have masks and gloves? And if they don't, will the district provide that?
Our requirements are the requirements from the CDC and public health. We are providing the PPE, so we are providing gloves and masks. We have sent very specific information on some things that we're asking schools not to do, so such as gathering in any large groups over 10, maintaining large social distancing spaces. And as you know, our schools are extremely large, and so we do have a lot of ways to spread out as far as staff as they come in. Some of the specifics, and depending on the school, we have entrance doors where there's very minimal touch, exit doors that are minimal touch, so there's one-way hallways in some cases if the hallways aren't extremely large.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers, when they come in, staying in their individual classrooms, or the support staff staying in their offices. Most all of our meetings, we're using Zoom or we're using Microsoft Teams. Those have been extremely useful tools. And so those are just some of the ways where we're combating people having to come together closely and minimizing areas that maybe multiple people would gather in or have high-touch areas in.
And Dr. Flint, if a Gwinnett County Schools employee does not feel comfortable returning to the building, whether they be an educator, support staff, what have you, you all are honoring that?
Right. They just need to work with their direct supervisor or principal to work through that so they can continue to work from home and finish out any of the requirements for the work year or the school year. Of course, we have many different types of employees that that work in the school district. So teachers will end their contract at the end of next week prior to Memorial Day. And then we'll be looking to providing to provide summer school for students over the summer with a couple of different plans to provide that. And then starting back up the school year, however that might look next year, working on a plan to make sure that we're ready for students, whether we are coming back into the building, whether it's maybe a rotating schedule, or even whether we have to start digitally.
That decision will be made based on, I guess, whatever the conditions are as it relates to this COVID-19 pandemic, huh?
Right. And, you know, we typically held summer school for all of our students in elementary through high school in June, and we have revised that already. The only summer school that we're providing in the month of June is going to be our high school summer school options. And we have a number of different options, but they're all online. So our online campus, our Gwinnett online campus, is providing two sessions this year instead of one for our summer school program, so students can take classes through that. We also are continuing to provide credit recovery. So a student who may not have been successful in a course either this semester or even previous semesters, students have the need to make up those credits required for graduation, and we're able to provide that through a facilitator at the school. We're continuing also our community school programs for summer programming, although it'll all be online. And so driver's education is a good example of that, or if incoming students or existing students want to take health and PE, many of our schools are providing that. So those are a few of the examples that we're providing in the month of June.
Please have those teenagers take the online driving.
That's right. I think you've heard a lot about that on the news.
Yes,
but, we're doing our part on the on the online training. Parents will have to provide the actual driving for their students.
Every little bit helps, Dr. Flint. Every little bit helps.
That's right. I've got some teenagers myself, so I know how important that is.
Dr. Flint, Gwinnett County School District is, I believe, the largest school district in the state of Georgia. You all also provide education for a number of students with English as a second language.
Right.
We all know the plight of some students, as I mentioned earlier, in K through 12 and public education and all those circumstances in terms of households. If it gets to a point where you all may have to start the school year online, and given the connectivity issues for a lot of folks, whether it be because of the household income, can you all provide that online education for every student in the Gwinnett County School District if it comes to that this fall?
Sure. That's one, it's a good question, and two, it's one that we've wrestled with from the start of having to learn digitally. And I would say right after March 12th, when we went to an online learning platform, we weren't 100% sure what it would look like to close out the school year. As a matter of fact, you'll recall we were planning 1 week at a time, because what we didn't want to do at that time was to say that we could very effectively finish the school year digitally if we didn't know that we were going to be able to do that. And so after the first week of digital learning, and this is something that we have been planning on for, in earnest the last 10 years, but really the use of technology since the late 90s, we weren't sure what the platforms were going to do. And so at the end of that first week, we were very confident that we were going to be able to finish the school year with the platforms that we had and the access for teachers to be able to provide that engaging instruction to students at home. Now, that doesn't at all match what a face-to-face teacher and environment would do.
Sure.
But it's what we had at the time. And I just have to say, before we get into that next year, the people who made that happen were the teachers, were the administrators that were providing the support staff on the back end, and the parents, and as well as the students. It was a heavy lift for everybody involved, and I just can't say enough about our teaching staff and how much they've learned from the onset of this. That first week, it probably didn't look like it does today, because as we go through weeks and weeks of digital learning, we continue to learn, we continue to add to our toolbox, and we continue to get better at it. So I will say we've had over 90% of our students who have been able to access the online resources in one way or the other. There's a lot of challenges there. There are some students that probably don't have the best devices or the best connectivity. And so that from the get-go was a concern, and it's something we're continuing to work on. I don't know that I can tell you today that or when we go back to school, if it happens to be digitally, that that will be perfect. What I can say is that we're extremely concerned about it and looking at every option for providing internet access, if that's a possibility, to students who don't have it. We're actually starting a pilot, even though it's the very end of this school year, with some community partners to try that out in one of our schools, and we'll roll that out into more schools if that works and is very successful. We early on started a process of checking out laptops to students, and that was based on the data that we had. And so I thought it was really important to know what students were connecting with and what they were actually able to do with the devices they had in their home. Once we had that data back, we were able to do a tiered process where we were able to check out those laptops to the students who needed them the most. And so that's what we need to continue to look at. We need to continue to partner with as many external agencies as possible and businesses. We've got some very strong partners in our internet providers, and they're continuing to come to the table to help come up with options to provide internet access to families in homes. Because it's not perfect.
Actually 10% of your student population that's not accessing the online education for whatever reason, which...
It is over 90%. We're still working to find, at what level those students are and aren't being able to access it. I do think it's important to note that the schools reached out to every one of the students during this time, made contact with them and their families, talked them through what we had to offer, and if they just couldn't get that access, we provided a paper copy of resources for them to come up to school to pick up and to take home and to do that and bring it back and turn it in so we could look at the students' mastery of the curriculum here.
What do you hope comes out of this in terms of any changes or changes that need to be made for K through 12 education, public education, and being able to have those resources for so many students of different various economic backgrounds?
Well, I think we can all say that we've learned a good bit through this, especially with the use of technology and the changing way to do either business, commerce, or education. I do hope that we're going to take a good bit of learning in the education realm out of this, and I know for a fact we've already done that, and we've made those modifications. We've gotten stronger over the last couple of months. I think as we look to the future, one very important aspect of this is how important the connection of a teacher and a classroom and a class of students is to education. I don't think we have minimized that in the past, but I think while we've been learning digitally, it has strengthened our resolve around the need for a very strong public education system that provides the highest quality education to every student in our community, regardless of their background, resources, learning style, or where they are as a family.
And finally, Dr. Flint, you and I both know high school football is big in this state. Correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a long time since I've been in high school, but those fall sports are football and I think cross country and maybe volleyball, is that correct?
Right. We've got many of them that are out there, and we're a little bit on hold right now as to what that might look like.
Yeah.
I think the Georgia High School Association has been working on that as well. So we're going to continue to work with our partners. Of course, we play many different counties in all of our sports, and so we'll just wait additional guidance. We do want to get back to that, but we want to get back to it in a safe as way as possible.
Nothing like Friday night in the fall at a high school football game. In terms of timeline for making that decision, when or if you all will return to that traditional fall school environment?
Right, and we have our plan, current calendar and an alternate calendar. We're going to continue to look at those options. You know, I think the more time students are away from their education, the more time there is for that slippage. And so not only do we need to get back as soon as possible, but we need to look at ways that we can even remediate or go back and provide review for this last year, because the last thing we want are students that are not prepared to move on to the next class or grade level. And so we're committed to making that happen.
Dr. Steve Flint, Gwinnett Associate Superintendent for School Improvement and Operations. Dr. Flint, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Great. Well, thank you for having me.
This is Closer Look, and I'm Rose Scott, and we are fundraising today because we need your support to keep WABE going strong. But don't go anywhere right now, because this break will be short. Just help us if you can at wabe.org/donate. And joining me now is WABE's own Alita McCowman. She's our education specialist.
That's right, Rose. Call 678-553-9090 or go to wabe.org/donate. Your financial support right now will help WABE continue its excellent news coverage. But today, you will also help us partner with Piedmont Healthcare Foundation to provide frontline workers with personal protective equipment. And your one donation today will provide one kit for a worker, including masks, gowns, gloves, and shoe covers. So please help us by making a donation now at wabe.org/donate or by calling 678-553-9090.
wabe.org/donate or 678-553-9090. Thinking back over the past 2 months, well, we've done a lot here at WABE. We're now producing a podcast called Did You Wash Your Hands? And we created a national call-in show on Saturdays called America Amplified, Life, Community, and COVID-19. Your donation right now will help us continue this important programming. So give right now at wabe.org/donate.
Or call 678-553-9090. You know how much you can give, but if you're able to make a contribution of $1,200 or more, you will become a Cornerstone member, and your generosity will allow us to deliver great programming, and we can continue to be a trusted source of information. So please give as you are able to. And if it's at the Cornerstone level, you can do so at wabe.org/donate or with a call to 678-553-9090. And thank you.
Closer Look is just about 30 seconds away. Thanks so much for your help. Please give us a call, 678-553-9090.
It only takes a couple minutes to give, and if you can't commit to a monthly sustaining gift, consider a one-time gift of $50 or $100 if you can afford $500. You know what's right for you. Just please play your part at wabe.org/donate or call 678-553-9090. And again, thank you.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. Like many school systems across the nation, Georgia's K-12 public schools are closed for the rest of the academic year. In fact, many districts are near or have already finished for the summer break. Yes, this COVID-19 pandemic has forced school districts to alter their typical end-of-year logistics, such as something simple as cleaning out classrooms. But there's a good reason for that. Now, early in the program, I spoke with Gwinnett County Schools Associate Superintendent for School Improvement and Operations, Dr. Steve Flint, who shared details regarding the school district's new plan to end the school year.
Well, we did get some good feedback from teachers and support staff. What we're doing is really having a rotating plan. Our teachers and many of the support staff are going to be continuing to work from home, but they will have available times this week and next week to come in and close out their classrooms.
Now, the original plan was to bring educators back to their work sites next week, but that changed following backlash from staff and parents. And one of Georgia's prominent educator organizations, such as the Georgia Association of Educators, also voiced opposition to Gwinnett's original plan. And joining me now to discuss this and some other issues regarding schools is the Georgia Association of Educators chief lobbyist, Joe Fleming. Joe, thanks for taking time. I really appreciate it.
It's great to be with you, Rose. Thank you.
Before we get into Gwinnett County's new plan, let's just talk about in general what you all are hearing from educators during this extraordinary time, something I've been saying for at least 7 weeks now.
I think their biggest concern probably is getting their students safely back to class. Teachers don't teach for a big salary. They teach because they love to help kids learn. And I think a lot of our teachers are really missing the classroom and anxious to see their students again. That on top of the financial condition that the state of Georgia's in, and the cuts that will be made to education. I think there's also some apprehension about going forward, furloughs, potential pay cuts, other things that may suffer as a result of declining revenues.
You all, the Georgia Association of Educators, some would consider you a very powerful educators association, lobbying and obviously an advocate on behalf of educators in Georgia. What is a top priority for you all now with this pandemic and ensuring the members of your organization that they are being heard loud and clear?
Right. So you alluded to this in your comments. My son would be out of school next week for the end of the current school year. So it's appropriate now that we begin turning our attention to how schools will open late summer, programs that will be offered during the summer, preparing for a safe learning environment, and then also with the General Assembly reconvening on June 11th, making sure that the appropriate funding is there for education.
Well, let's just go ahead and get into that conversation real quickly, because as you know, when lawmakers come back, there may be a lot of attention paid to moving the state forward because of the pandemic. Does your organization have concerns that education may not be in that top five list of priorities for state lawmakers?
I think education will be in the top five of priorities. Currently, about 50% of the state budget goes to education, K through 12 and higher education. Mm-hmm. So it's a significant priority in the state budget. But the fact is that the governor and the appropriations chairman in the House and Senate have called for 14% reductions. It's a significant hit to education. So it's going to take a Herculean effort by legislators to keep schools funded at an adequate level so that our kids continue to learn when school does reconvene.
And also, Joe, when the fall comes and the students are ready to return to classrooms, if that is possible, then there's a lot of concern about where should teachers start? For those kids that may not have been able to access learning online, Or should there be a period where the educators just focus on getting the kids caught up, those that need to? Maybe there's some remediation involved. What are you hearing from educators in terms of that?
I think there are legitimate concerns about assessment of students' academic progress during this period. That'll have to be addressed in the fall. Grading for the spring semester varied widely between districts, and a number of tests were suspended, such as Georgia Milestones. So we do have concerns about getting our kids back up to speed and then moving forward from there.
Let's now talk about Gwinnett County's original plan to bring teachers and support staff back to the work sites next week. Initially, when you all heard this, what'd you think?
We filed our objections with the Gwinnett County school system. We believe that it was too soon for teachers to be required to come back to school. The Gwinnett County school system eventually walked back their initial policy. We did not believe that it was an essential and necessary activity limited to essential personnel only. You know, the primary purpose that was alluded to was to, for teachers to close out their classrooms and get their belongings. There's no real urgency for that, certainly in the midst of a coronavirus epidemic. So we're delighted that the Gwinnett County school system changed their policy, allowed teachers and education support professionals to work from home. And we can worry about picking up personal belongings at a later time. They also had teachers coming back to the classroom to close out grades for the end of the school year. And that can easily be done online. So I think they listened to us, they listened to the teachers, they listened to the other education staff, and made a change that is more favorable than the initial policy.
And Joe, as you know, each county is different as it relates to the COVID-19 pandemic. There are more confirmed cases, more hospitalizations, sadly more deaths in other counties that may not reflect in counties in other parts of the state. What is the GAE's stance on what you hope districts will follow in terms of the guidelines in deciding when to bring educators back or even to allow kids to come back?
Well, first and foremost, students should not return to the classroom until it's safe to do so. As we move into the summer, there's a long list of things that need to be considered before schools can reopen. We talked about tests and assessments, but we also have the health and welfare of our children and our teachers and other staff to be concerned with. Will students, for example, be required to wear masks, and teachers for that matter? Will they be furnished by the school system? How is bus transportation gonna work? You know, we have elementary schools where we have three kids to a bench in elementary schools. It's virtually impossible to practice any form of social distancing on a packed school bus. Athletics, you mentioned, is a good example of how are we going to be prepared to deal with athletics. Cafeteria, for example, changing classrooms. There's a whole list of things that need to be considered before schools can be reopened. And we're hoping each and every school district takes into account those many, many logistical issues.
You know, earlier when I asked you, Joe, about lawmakers when they return to the Capitol and education being a high priority on their list, have you all been trying to already just talk to state lawmakers about some specifics that you all want to see addressed as soon as possible?
Yeah, we continue to have contact with state legislators on a number of issues, certainly regarding education funding, the teachers' retirement system, and some other legislation that may or may not come up in the remaining part of the session. So we're actively engaged with our legislators, sharing information with them, but also taking information back from them.
Joe, I've asked a lot of people this question as it relates to this pandemic and lessons learned, regardless of what the issue we're talking about, but as it relates to education. And, you know, many people talked about that if this changes how we educate our kids in this nation, which could include less in-class instruction, which you and I both know is so crucial and critical for not just for academics, but for social and emotional learning and just, you know, social interaction for kids. So what is your hope in terms of any lessons that can be learned from this pandemic as it relates to education, particularly for K through 12?
Well, certainly no one would have predicted this to happen. I think the state has responded fairly well in some regards with their response to the coronavirus. I think a lesson to be learned and acted upon includes, for example, quality broadband access. I think it's also an opportunity to look at some of the waivers that the Department of Education gives to certain school districts in exchange for a commitment and results showing improved academic success. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the waivers that the Department of Education has adopted during this time continues and expands flexibility of school districts to increase class size. In fact, we have one county school district in North Georgia that's already announced that class sizes are going to increase in the fall. That seems to us the completely wrong direction to take, not only because of the coronavirus and the health impacts of increasing class sizes, but because a higher student-teacher ratio mm-hmm. is not conducive to improved learning.
Here in the Atlanta area, two fairly large school districts, Atlanta Public Schools and DeKalb County Schools. Now, APS just hired its new superintendent, Dr. Lisa Herring. DeKalb County is still looking. Are you all concerned about leadership during this time with districts? And do you weigh in with districts when it comes to leadership?
We have a staff of six or seven that are in the field working with school districts, superintendents, teachers every day. We believe that teachers and education support professionals should be involved in the creation of any plan to reopen schools. And I think, frankly, that's one of the things that got Gwinnett County in a little bit of trouble, was that there wasn't that input from teachers and staff mm-hmm. in developing their plan to require teachers to come back to school. So I think by having a seat at the table at some of those decision-making sessions, that we'll be in a good position to have input and affect the process going forward.
And for the record, you all are in support now of Gwinnett County's new plan. Or maybe not.
It's a little bit light on specifics. The material I've seen come from the Gwinnett County school system puts a lot of the emphasis on the principal of the school to make decisions about how and when staff returns to classroom. I prefer a more detailed plan, but certainly it's better than the original one.
Will you all reach out to them, Joe?
Yeah, we've been in contact with our local leadership in Gwinnett County on a regular basis and are working through our local members there to affect the process.
All right. Joe Fleming is the Georgia Association of Educators chief lobbyist, and we've been talking about a lot as it relates to when and if students will return to the classroom along with educators and support staff and best practices when that does happen. Joe, appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. Thank you, Rose.
That's it for this edition of Closer Look, which is produced by Grace Walker and LaShawn Hudson. Our engineer is Shelley Canavy. If you missed any of today's program, it's online at wabe.org/closerlook. And of course, you can listen to Closer Look weeknights at 8 p.m. and listen whenever you want, because Closer Look is now available as a podcast. Just visit NPR One or your favorite streaming app and subscribe. This is 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. This is Closer Look, and I'm Rose Scott. Yes, we're fundraising today, but this spring we're doing it a little differently and keeping these breaks as short as possible. So please help us if you can at wabe.org/donate. Joining me is WABE's education specialist, Alitza McCallman.
Thanks, Rose. That is wabe.org/donate or 678-553-9090. And your donations right now help pay for all the critical news and information that you get on your station. But today, you can also help a frontline worker with your donation. And that's because we're partnering with Piedmont Healthcare Foundation so that each donation that we get to WABE today will provide a frontline worker with a kit of personal protective equipment. And we're talking about items like masks, gowns, gloves, and shoe covers. So please help by making a donation now at wabe.org/donate or by calling 678 553-9090. And thank you again to Piedmont's COVID Infrastructure Fund for sponsoring today's partnership.
So yeah, it's wabe.org/donate or 678-553-9090. Thanks to all the listeners who've already made their donation. Folks like David Elwanger in Fairburn. He says, although I'm a sustainer, I always give a little extra each pledge drive. It's more important than ever, as thorough and evidence-based news keeps us safe. Thanks to Lisa, Lois, Jim, Rose, thank you, and all the WABE reporters that keep us apprised of local news. It would be very bad if we did not have all y'all to tune in every day. Thanks a lot, David, and I love the fact that you said y'all. And we can only do this because of donations from folks like you. Please give at wabe.org/donate.
Or call 678-553-9090. It's important that we hear from people like you because 80% of our funding comes from the Atlanta community. That's not a slogan, it's the truth. Many of our listeners will give around $15 a month, but give what you feel you can afford. And you can do that at wabe.org/donate or with a call to 678-553-9090. And thank you.
Thank you so much to everyone who's helped us so far during the drive. But we still need a few more of you, so please give right now at 678-553-9090.
Or at wabe.org/donate. And if you donate online, you'll get to see all of the great thank you gifts that we offer to members. It only takes a couple minutes to give, and if you're already a sustaining member of WABE, thank you. And please consider giving an additional gift. We need you, Atlanta. Go to wabe.org/donate or call 678-553-9090 and thank you.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.